This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 686, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 686. I'm Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
It's hot.
Oh, is it?
It's hot. I'm sweaty.
Is our first "it's hot" complaint of the year?
Yeah, I just wanted to get out of the way. Also, I was a little excited about it. You know, it's like when the when the birds return in the spring.
People's hearts turn to love, and Josh starts complaining about the heat.
Yeah.
I get it. I just closed all my windows and doors, for noise reasons, and it's going to get stuffy in here real quick.
Yep.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, call it the pick of the week. The worst is when I forget to reopen them, and then by the end of the day, I'm like, why is it so hot in here? Oh, right, because I closed everything for the show.
I do that in the summer. I do that. And then like at like 4:30, I'm like, what? What's happened? Oh, no.
We'll talk about the heat. We'll talk about other comics we read. We'll talk about the patron pick, listener mail if we have time. Unlike last week, we didn't have time, but we're going to make time this week by not going so long on every book we talk about.
Thankfully, I was able to just cut and paste the mail from last week. So that was a win for me.
Last week, we had all these event books. And we ended up going so long on each one. It's not our fault. Not our fault. It'll be fun.
It's literally our fault.
It is our fault. No one else. We are in charge. There's no buck to pass. The buck stops here.
You did it. No, you did it. I think we both agree. Yeah, okay.
It's Ryan's fault. It'll be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be spoilers. Exercise some caution. This week, I have to say the shocking pick is by Josh Flanagan.
The shocking pick is maybe the worst title of a book that's ever been pick of the week. Is Deceased Number 2. You may remember this as a zombie book, although they say it's not zombies, that we read. Was it a patron pick?
It was a patron pick.
And listen, here's the story. The story here is that I think Tom Taylor's going to be the guy.
He's been around a while.
Yeah, I know. But lately, I don't know if he's just been in front of me and but lately, all of the things that I've read, they come across, I'm like, oh, he's got the stuff here. Same thing that we've said about all the other guys, and you know, there's guys and gals. I'm using it that way, but I liked that last issue, despite the fact that I don't like the premise of the issue, or not even I don't like it. I just wouldn't have picked it up.
Incredibly fun.
Yeah,
and I think it's important to note that when we did talk about Deceased Number 1, we both said we liked it, and I said I was going to keep reading it, and you said you might keep reading it, and you said. You should just make sure I don't forget about it.
Right.
And so this week I said, hey, doing my job, don't forget about Deceased Number 2.
I should note I had not forgotten about it. But
okay,
I appreciate
I was just making sure. Because I had just read it. And I was like, oh, that was really, really good.
Yeah.
He shouldn't miss that.
Yep. And so I read all my books, and I think the only thing that really stuck out, like, this is a thing I can talk about, this is a thing that I can put some oomph behind and really mean it, was Deceased. You know, because you'll be reading the books and you go, was this one? I don't know, you make some mental notes and then you go all the way through them. And then afterwards, I sort of looked at, you know, the titles of all the different things that I read. And I was like, oh my goodness, Deceased is the pick of the week. And I'm good with that. I really do give most of the credit to the story. Trevor Hairsign, guy's been around a good long time, is a veteran. Is fine. It's not my favorite thing, but you know, it definitely worked in here. There's a lot.
I like the style
for the book. I think it works. Yeah.
The only thing I noticed, and it doesn't matter because it's an Elseworlds book for all intents and purposes, is that, you know, Damien is like 20.
Well, that's here. I don't think that's anybody's fault at this point. You know,
I'm like, just saying, in size wise, not the way he's written, I mean, but like, he's drawn very big.
If you were working on one of these books and you called the Batman office and you're like, how old is Damien? They'd be like, prank caller, and then hang up. Like, there's no way to do that. I do like the way that the book was or the art was produced. It's ironically, I don't know if that's ironic. Inker on this was Stefano Gaudiano, who did his last issue of The Walking Dead this week. So he has some experience inking the end of
he's
the world.
He's been pigeonholed.
Yeah, exactly.
You better change your name, man. I liked it. It had a dirty, like, kind of rough look to it. I like the way that Hairsign draws people. They're sort of lanky.
I think
they're not giant like Ed McGuinness character. Yeah. You know, Superman's kind of lanky. Like, I like that kind of look to them.
I think the body language and posture on everybody is really good.
Yeah.
My point with that is that I'm not going to sit here and be like, this art's amazing. Like, it's really good. It does its job. It doesn't make me weep with joy, but it's the right thing for this thing. That's sort of what I'm getting at. So you've got this story where, I mean, it's a zombie story, but basically it's transmitted through smartphones and screens and things like that, which, you know, I don't know why anyone isn't dead at this point other than grandmas.
The mutated anti-life equation.
Right, that's right. Which is pretty brilliant, too, in making this. Yeah. It's almost a better – it makes more sense than, like, whatever Marvel Zombies did. But also Marvel Zombies didn't care, so I kind of like that about it, too. And I think that my favorite scenes were the ones with Ollie and Hal and Dinah.
Yeah, they were good.
It actually overlapped a little with the Green Lantern this week because Oliver Queen was in that too. But I really liked the way that Ollie sort of gets on top of Hal, you know, for being kind of lame.
Yeah, this Ollie and also the one in the other book, which we're not going to talk about, were basically not the Ollie in the other book, in his solo book.
Yeah.
This is the old school.
This is Oliver Queen.
This is old school Oliver Queen, and that's the best Oliver Queen.
This is Oliver Queen from The Dark Knight Returns before that. You know, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And maybe that was just the where I got that. I was like, oh, this is what I want out of this character. And, you know, the scene of them at the campfire was great. You know, and they play I Will Always Love You on a bowstring with her singing. And then, you know, Hal goes and checks his phone and they're camping. So they don't know what's going on, which is a stretch, but I buy it.
Sure.
You know, and like he makes a little, just a little, some structure stuff in here where he's like, if she sings, won't she kill us? And then, you know, Ollie makes fun of him for that. And, you know, then she has to turn her power on him because he's so powerful that he'll just kill them and destroy everything when he goes zombified. And then the best turn of that is that she kills him and the ring's like, all right, this one's done. Need a new one. You, well, I don't want to be Green Lantern.
Too bad.
Doesn't matter. You know, Superman shows up and he's like, take it. We need it. Let's go.
We don't got time to fuck around.
Then you save that. Then you have a really good scene where Batman has been infected and he knows it. And he found a way to slow it down by putting on the goddamn brilliant Mr. Freeze outfit, which I was like, that's so good.
The bubblehead.
Not even just the visual of it. Like, I was like, that's just smart DC comicking, you know?
Yeah, like, he that was the cliffhanger in issue one, was that Nightwing was infected.
Right.
And he was pouncing on Batman as the cliffhanger. We didn't get the resolution because we jump to Batman's already been infected. Don't know what happened to Nightwing.
And Alfred is standing behind him with a shotgun.
It's a great panel.
It's so good. And it's just, it's like in the same way that I think that we had talked about how Donny Cates was using Marvel characters, you know, a year or so ago. I'm seeing that same kind of thing in here, or what Ethan Sachs has been doing.
You're very right. I didn't make that connection, but this is very much feels like the Donny Cates of DC. Tom Taylor, who I said before has been around for a while, is slowly creeping up the ladder.
Yeah.
Of you know, the any creative medium has a ladder of priorities, you know, of people who are given higher, you know, priority work, and he's creeping up. He should be on more high profile stuff. Yep. He's very, very good at this.
But if it takes sort of digging out these sort of genre books that they've got him on, and the, you know, the whatever the video game spinoffs or whatever, which is part of the reason I probably missed a lot of the work.
Yeah,
it's just, it's just a fun issue. Like I was like, oh, that's a great DC comic, with a concept that should have been tired and awful, basically.
Yeah, and the ending is legitimately like shocking, sad, mm-hmm. exciting ending. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we gave you the spoiler warning, so the payoff of the shotgun in, it's not in the first act, but it's here, mm-hmm. in which, you know, Batman, it progresses to the point where Alfred has to use the shotgun, and it was a great page. That's a great page.
Yes, it is. The storytelling is really strong. And I also really like the idea that, I mean, this is because this is Elseworlds or whatever the fuck they're calling it. When they get infected, they're dead. There's no coming back from it.
Right.
Like, they're not, like, when Batman gets infected, there's no saving him. And it's one of the few times where I've believed the relationship between Damian and Bruce Wayne. Like, yes. He goes to tell him something, and he's stuttering, you know, he can't get it out, you know, and Damian's facade drops, and he cares, and there needs to be more of that to make us give a shit about this horrible, annoying character.
I didn't like that. Well, I guess it makes sense that he's giving Damian the cowl since Nightwing is dead.
Sure.
Although, once again, I guess Tim's out playing basketball with Richie Cunningham's brother. But
this is Elseworld, man.
Anyway, I agree. I mean, I had a couple of books that I thought if I had to pick, I'd be trying to pick between. But this is definitely one of them. This is incredibly fun. I probably would. I think I was going to read issue one anyway if it had been the patron pick. Mm-hmm. You probably weren't. Yeah. So I'm glad it was a patron pick because you would be a bummer if you missed out on this, I think.
Yeah, and it's just the right balance of, like, it's this all this stuff that's dark, but the book didn't feel dark.
No, it's kind of, it's silly at the end of the day.
Yes, I mean, and that's the way it needs to be.
It's zombies, you know, so.
But,
I guess they're scary, but they're also kind of
I'm looking at this cover right here, you know, and it's, there's the title, and it's just zombies trying to eat Batman. There's no way I would ever pick this up in a billion years.
No, that's what's great about the patron pick.
So surprises are fun.
Cool. I'm glad you liked it. I really enjoyed it. It's fun. Check it out. It's a 6-issue miniseries. Not too late to jump on if you haven't tried it yet.
I'm guessing the War of the Realms number 5 would have been up there for you.
Yes, it was. It was in the mix. This issue was kind of the. It's that scene in the Marvel movie. Yeah. Well, it's that scene in the Avengers Marvel movie where everyone's fighting at the same time. You just kind of keep cutting back and forth. Yes. That's kind of what this issue was. So it wasn't like big on character development. There was no big – I don't remember there being any big moments, but it was more like – it was that scene in Endgame where everyone is fighting at the same time. That's what this issue
was. Yeah, it's the buildup to the denouement.
Right, which was fun. And you turn a page and another group of people showed up, and Wolverine's with the Warriors 3 and Kazar's jumping out of a – airship with his knife, and somehow Captain Britain has the ebony blade. Like, it's all fun.
Yeah, and also, like, I think it gives us the much needed sense of forward progress now. Like, mm-hmm. we've gotten a sense of where everybody is, what they're doing, what's going on with the world and everything, and like, okay, this is the thing now. So there's gonna be a turning point, and I think it's time for that.
Right.
Yeah, it was really fun. I don't know that there was much I could. Because of that, you're right, it didn't have like that moment or anything. It was just, it was a good place to hang around for a little while.
So at the end, when, you know, Thor is incapacitated, he'd gone into the sun to rebuild, and I assume that's where Mjolnir will come back. We almost get some Thor-peen.
There was some timeline jumping that was confusing.
There's so many books. We talked about the Blizzard of books, and this week was no different. Odin and Freya are incapacitated in Stonehenge by Malekith, and so Jane says there must always be a Thor. Sometimes there must be more than one. So she, you know, hits her hammer on the ground to become Thor. She's wearing a Straight Outta Compton t-shirt. I didn't even notice.
Does it actually say Compton, or is it one of those pithy?
Well, straight out of something.
Chemo, cancer, something.
Could be, but I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
The weird thing is though, I didn't read any other books this other than the tie-ins. Like there was a Iron Man tie-in and a Captain Marvel tie-in and whatever. I didn't read any of the minis this week.
Uh huh. I read the which we'll talk about.
As blizzardy to me, but it was. This was like the action showcase issue.
Yeah, it was just there was a bit where Thor showed up. He pops through the head of a frost giant, and then you know he's fighting, and he says, and then the next page is the sun now, so that's where the near Thorpeen is.
Right.
And I was like, wait a minute, where were we before? Because it gives you place names, yes. But it doesn't give you time.
Right. Yeah, I actually had that same thought because we were going through the battle as it currently stands. You know, they're in London, they're in New York, they're wherever. And then we see Thor fighting. You're right. That was the only thing that was a little wonky was when did that Thor fight happen? But I mean, this is fun. So this is issue 5 of it's not 6, is it?
I don't know.
That would seem really short. It's kind of like
that's preferable. Spider-Man. By the way.
It's sure, but on the other hand, there's been a lot of build up.
Sure.
You don't want just to have one issue of wrap up, you know what I mean? But we'll see. It was fun though.
It was fun. I had a good time with it. I think at one point I was like, wait, who's drawing this? It must be Russell Dauterman. And the reason that I said that, because he's just doing so much work. It's like this guy whose name I didn't really know just a few years ago has just like he went through like this vicious boot camp where he you know, has to draw every character at Marvel in all of these huge action scenes. There was a thing where like we touched back to Gorilla Man and I was like, oh, here it comes. Nope, not now.
Yeah, he's just in one panel holding brew.
Oh, yeah. That was another moment, too, where they're in Antarctica and Agent Roz and Jane Foster, who are both mortals, are the ones fighting the Minotaur, which seems dumb. And then I guess she kills him or she stabs him with her, like, spear, Gunnir. And then we cut to the next page is Asgard now. And I guess that's Jane Foster again talking to Heimdall. Like, that was another one. That was my problem with this. It was a couple of times where the timeline went wonky. And I was like, I don't know.
What page is the Antarctica scene?
That is 14.
Okay.
And it's the next page.
Is that Jane? I assume that's
Yes,
Jane.
It is. I went back and forth over this for a while. And then Heimdall calls her Lady Jane. Yeah.
Yeah, it says in the caption.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
I guess that would be a problem with the issue. It would be that they didn't really tell you when they were flashing back and forth.
I think that, I mean, they kind of did. I just don't think it was that clear. But also, I don't know if – I think sometimes all the time jumping that they do in comic books now is not really necessary.
Yeah, I would sort of put it down to the fog of war. Mm-hmm. Like everything is happening very quickly, yeah. And so we're jumping around. But I only noticed it with the Thor page. So I guess I didn't notice it with that page. It was like, wait a minute.
Yep, but I had a couple of those. And I just generally don't like in comics where I feel the need to flip back. Now, sometimes that's my fault. But I was like, I don't think this is my fault.
For once in your life, you can say that.
Yeah. Listen, I'll take the blame. I'm very good at that. But you know, it was super fun. It was beautiful to look at. You know, it did feel like we're getting to a culmination point. These are not, it didn't really take away from the experience. It's been so far a really fun, event, as it were.
I didn't read the Journey to the Mystery one because we read issue one. That was a patron pick.
Yeah.
Issue 2, I made it about a quarter of the way through. I was like, I don't really care about this. So I stopped.
So the funny thing about this from the McElroys, I guess, out writing, I guess that's supposed to mean something to me. I bet the millennials know, but the Gen X kids.
We talked about this. The
I know.
First
I remember.
They're podcasters.
But even that, And then that just creates, that creates feelings of resentment.
Sure.
That creates feelings of, anyway. Either way, I remember I actually liked the first issue and I was sort of, I'd forgotten about it basically. And so I read four without having read since one.
Oh, wow.
I had not been going through it because I was like, oh yeah, I liked all these characters together. And much the same thing. I guess I didn't have a chance to get tired of it because I was like, oh, this is really fun. But I also didn't really feel like I needed to have read the issues that came before it. Like, now they have the baby that they were looking for. But it turns out because the baby was conceived in Muspelheim, the baby's got some searcher in it. So it's a little bit demon-y. And then you've also got the Ares, the god of war, driving a semi-truck that is sort of flaming and smoking because the searcher is inside the cab or in the trailer. And they're also looking for the baby. And of course, at the end, he gets the baby. And then so the end will be them getting the baby back. But there's some really great sequences in here. There's some like lovely cartooning from Andre Lima Araujo, who I believe is a listener. I've seen him pop up a lot more over time, but I really like the cartooning. I love the layouts in this book. There's a bunch of characters that are getting juggled around. And it's really easy for some of these new Marvel characters, I used an NU there, to get annoying.
Right. Yeah.
But I like handled the right way and having them all together. It was a fun grouping. I think Baldur.
Remind the people who the grouping are.
Let's see. We got Baldur the Brave. We got Kate Bishop. We got the Deathlok girl. We got Thori, the dog. And then I don't know who the Stephen Strange equivalent is.
There is a schism in my house currently
over
Thori.
Oh, I'm sure.
Where one of us really likes Thori. One of us really doesn't like Thori. One of us has a show and talks about how they don't like Thori.
Right. No, I'm following. Thori in this talks a lot. Thori is basically a completely sentient being who explains things in this. And it's kind of annoying and it's not canon, whatever it is.
Right.
But I'm fine with the joke. It actually doesn't bother me. If given the choice, if I could write a dog that talks normally but pretty much has dog thoughts, this is what it would sound like. And I do find that a little hilarious. Now, it's a definite chance that you could overdo it. Then the one other thing is their safe house. They're running out of money. They don't know what to do, but they end up getting a suite at a hotel in, I guess it's Vegas or something like that. One of those towns. And the conceit is that while the War of the Realms is going on, the henchmen have nothing to do. So they're having a convention at Henchfest. So like it's just all of like hand guys and aim guys and Hydra guys, just like the mid-level red shirts.
That's funny.
Are all there. And they discover there's a bit where Wonder Man wants to go there, basically, and Wonder Man's also on the team, and Kate Bishop's like, you just wanted to come here so somebody would recognize you, and somebody goes, hey, I know you, but they recognize Hawkeye instead, and that's when the big fight starts, and the henchmen don't want to call any of the big guys in, because they're like, we can do this, you know, and so, you know, and they're kind of tough, and it was fun,
That's
issue.
Always a good joke, the henchmen yes. in the group, without the leaders, is always a good joke.
Yep.
I don't ever get tired of that joke.
So, you know, it was a fun issue. It was fun to read. I wasn't lost, even having skipped two issues. I really liked the cartooning and the coloring. It was a good time.
Maybe I'll look at it. Because I do like that joke. Although you just told it to me.
It doesn't matter. I mean, it's better than what I said.
Okay, I'll take a look.
There's a cat man and a lady who are like running the convention, and they have this sort of ongoing thing in the background, which is really funny too.
Okay, I'll look.
Yeah, let us move along. So, Old Man Quill, as written by Ethan Sachs, who had done Old Man Hawkeye that we both really loved. I really think that this has gotten stronger as we've kept going. I don't know that the original conceit was wonderful. There's this church of whoever, and they're trying to track down Peter Quill for reasons I don't remember. But every issue that we've gone through, I've liked. And I've liked them more as sort of it coalesced and he sort of gets the feeling of writing these characters. And I guess the big reveal in this one is that the sort of god of this church that they're all going after is Galactus. There's been a lot of Galactus lately. It's a little like, over, you know, in DC, they'll have things where, like, there's a lot of Joker going on.
There has been a lot of Galactus, you're right.
Yeah, and so between this and Fantastic Four and Doctor Strange, and it's in at least three books, maybe more. That being said, like, I'm not over the idea of this world. This is a really fun world, I think, where you've got one of the characters that showed up was Viv, the Vision daughter.
Viv, yeah.
Yeah, and she's had, like, her... like the side of her head blown off. So she's sort of like Carl in The Walking Dead, like her eyes missing, but it goes all the way up through her skull. She's got like a taco shape into her head. Mm. And that's just her thing. And, you know, so that's the thing that's happening to her in the future. And, you know, the wizened Guardians of the Galaxy's members, I think by sort of scraping off that edge of youthful impertinence is kind of interesting too. And I think it's being handled well.
Do you think it holds together as strongly as Hawkeye did? Because Hawkeye was very focused. You know, he's on a very focused mission. Get to this thing and stop this thing or kill this thing.
I don't think it's as good and I don't think it holds together. But a lot of the elements that I think I liked about the previous story, I think were in here. And this was the story where what's this dude's name? The Ray Pulsar. It's like an energy being, has a ton of power. He's contained in a suit and they're all trying to figure out how to fight him, you know, and they have to come together as a team. And I was like, oh, this feels like Guardians of the Galaxy for probably the first time through here. So that was kind of fun. You know, it's not great, but I get increasingly like looking forward to it when I see the cover.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad you came around on it.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's, you know, the elements of the skill are definitely there. Ibram Robertson's pretty good. I don't think it's quite up to the Marco Cicchetto level of the other one, but it does the job. Well, right, exactly.
So I wasn't sure if I was going to read Black Cat number one. I saw it on the list and on the little, little screen on my iPad, I couldn't tell who the creative team was because they were very small, the names. And so I said, oh, fuck it. I like Black Cat. She was fun and she's been fun in the Spider-Man books. So I'll just check it out and downloaded it. And it was written by Jed McKay. His name, I don't know. He's apparently done a bunch of smaller side books that I haven't read at Marvel. But art by Travel Foreman, which was a surprise. That. And ever since Animal Man, although those many years ago, he's been really one of my favorite artists. He's at least he's one of the most interesting artists in comics. No one draws like him.
True.
And so I thought, well, that's an interesting choice for Black Cat. That's not what I would expect. Because, you know, the cover's by J. Scott Campbell. That's what I would expect. Not Travel Foreman. So
the J. Scott Campbell cover, I was like, I don't want that. And then I saw the Travel Forum was on. I thought, what a weird contrast.
It's a very strange contrast. And what you get here is a really fun heist issue. Obviously, you see this Black Cat. But it felt a little like Ocean's 8 or 11, whichever one you want to choose. She has a small crew. They go to the Frick collection in the museum to run a heist. And, you know, there's security guys who are onto her. And then there's a chase and the Thieves Guild from the Spider-Man story gets involved, and it actually was incredibly fun, looked great, and had this sort of what I was thinking of calling it halfway through was sort of like this sassy attitude to the whole story. And then at one point, so one of the characters tells Black Cat she's being cheeky, and I was like, okay, that's also what it is. It's kind of like this cheeky, sassy kind of quality. And she's really fun. She has these two fun henchmen, and she's a fun character. She's Catwoman, basically. But it was just a really fun, smart heist story. You know, you get the whole thing in one issue, and then at the very end, there's a reveal in which her old mentor shows up. He's this old guy, you know, debonair guy with this great mustache. And so clearly that's a problem. And then you get a flashback backup story to him as a young man ripping off Dracula. It was just a bizarre, fun, really fun issue. And I almost told you to read it, but I didn't want to be too annoying, so I didn't tell you. But the Travel Foreman art's really terrific. There's some great pages. It's really, once you get into the high speed chase, it gets really high octane. The panels get all wonky and big and strange, really, it's really fun. I don't know what this is. I'm sure it won't go that long, but if Travel Foreman is drawing it and Jed McKay clearly has a fun take on it, I'm going to stick with it for however long it goes, because it was a good time. It was a really good time.
Well, all right then. Is Black Cat okay now?
Yeah, for a while. I meant to mention that she's very much the old Black Cat, although they don't ignore the fact that she was a mob boss at one point, you know. So she has, I guess that's why she's more comfortable having like a small crew, but she's not like the psychopath Black Cat from the, from those stories. She's totally the old Black Cat, but she has a bit, she has a bit of that experience in her.
All right.
Of having been a mob boss, but it's totally not that. If it was that, I wouldn't have liked it, because we both hated that. So this feels very classic.
Cool.
There's a couple of really terrific pages in here. I don't love the way they color Travel Foreman.
I think the last time he was on something, I was like, this is not working for him.
It's a little heavy handed. It would be better in a Matthew Wilson style, but it's not the worst I've seen.
I feel like his stuff would work well with more like a painterly thing that doesn't really cover up any of his marks.
Maybe. This one is very much where they you know, they're doing the musculature with the colors, and that
No. I hear you.
Quick break to talk about how you can help iFanboy, you can help support the show, keep the show going. This is how shows work in the modern age. The most effective way, patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where we've talked a lot about the patrons in this first half of the show. That's where people go to donate to the show, and you get lots of rewards for doing so. One of them is that you can vote to add a book to the rundown. We'll talk about that book later, but we've already talked about two books that were patron picks already. There's monthly hangouts. There is patron powers. There's all kinds of things, and we have a stretch goal there. Our next stretch goal is, in addition to adding the full-length video and mini shows that we did 10 years ago to our YouTube channel that were taken off the internet, we will do a non-comics media podcast that is once a month. And probably this month we would have talked about Chernobyl, I imagine.
There's no end to...
Or Deadwood, the movie.
Those are going to get longer. If those happen, they're going to be smorgasbords. It's going to be crazy.
Because Josh and I spent the whole month talking about Deadwood and Chernobyl, so we probably would have done it for a podcast if we hit the next stretch goal.
And I hope you like Neal Stephenson, people.
That's true. Also that... Oh, shit! I'll do that in a second after this segment's over.
Okay.
So patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go and help us out get to that next stretch goal. Also our t-shirt store, iFanboyThreadless.com. That's where you can go. We have our 7 shirts, the Herm shirt, Big League Podcast, Ratings, and one is Electro, GDAT, and Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. You can get those shirts. You can also get them in on mugs or shower curtains or bath mats, all kinds of things. I've got an iFanboy logo mug that I keep my cocktail stirrers in on my bar. That's so you can get that there. Also, iFanboy.com/support. That's where you can donate via PayPal if you want to do that and not be a patron. Totally cool. Also, iFanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can go find books we talk about in our Books Explode shows, as well as the general Amazon link and all that, is how we keep the show going. And we do appreciate it. Pays the bills, pays for our time, pays for the comics. And so we thank you. I'll get to the Neal Stephenson at the end of the show.
Don't forget.
I'm not going to forget.
You know what I forgot to do?
What?
I forgot to talk about the poor lettering in the pick of the week this week.
Yeah.
It's not a good lettering, but I don't need to do that. It was a good book, but I would...
Don't bring the party down, Josh.
I know, but it's important.
Okay.
There was a bunch, and the tails weren't pointing at the faces, and I was like, who... I mean, it says who did it, but I don't want to... But it was not up to my standards, which is like sort of unfortunate.
Who wrote this book?
Who's responsible? Give me the phone. Get me the phone. Meet the Skrulls, number 5. This is the end of this miniseries for those of you who think I'm no good at figuring that kind of thing out. I think I was more bullish on this than you. Did you keep reading it?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
That would be how you know you were more bullish on it.
It is a good indicator.
It's usually how you do it.
I think that it had some problems, this little 5-issue thing. At the end, I think it turned out as sort of a good overall story. A lot of the little issues that I had, which had to do with sort of confusion about who the hell I was looking at, what with the shape-shifting and it being a comic book, making it a little confusing. I think it turned out pretty well. And at the end, there were some twists and the fights and the family comes together in a way that... For a little while, you weren't sure, like, are the Skrulls the bad guys or not? And that doesn't... That's not a bad dramatic device. But it does make you wonder if you want to read it. You know what I mean? Like, is there... I wasn't sure who to root for in such a way that... I wasn't sure if I liked it, I guess, in that way. But as I came to the end, and they all sort of realize, you know, who they're for and what they're about. What their platform is.
I realize it's the model at least for right now in comics. But, you know, this book was put out to capitalize on Captain Marvel, a movie that came out a long time ago, at least in the pop cultural sphere. It's already been eclipsed by Endgame. It almost would have been better to make this like a trade that came out on like an OGN or just like a 96 page oversized, you know, like a one thing. Like you could go to the movie, come back and buy one complete story. Because no one's coming out of the film who's never read comics, going to the store, buying Meet the Scrolls number one, and then coming back for four consecutive months. No one's doing that.
But that's what they want them to do. I mean, that's their goal.
I know, but they don't do it. They don't.
Right.
It doesn't happen. So it would almost make more sense to make this like a double sized, you know, cut all the fat out, just tell a Meet the Scrolls story, or it just feels old to me because it was something that was meant to capitalize something that happened back in whenever the hell that movie came out, April. Or whatever it was.
At the same time, though, this is one of those Nick Lowe books.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Lowe, I think he's the X-Men group editor, but he's also responsible for squeezing in a lot of interesting miniseries.
For sure.
And you know, he wrote a little bit at the end of this, and, you know, he'd been talking to Robbie Thompson, you know, about trying to do something like this for a while. And this was sort of they figured out an opportunity to do that. So in the old days, this would have just been, hey, that was an interesting miniseries that they did, you know, and they made sure that Nico Hendershon's a great artist and they got Marcos Martin on covers. Like it's a good team. They were trying to put together something really good and interesting. And I think largely they succeeded with that. And again, these things are never, you know, cash money rollers. Like it's never a really big thing, but I like what they're trying. I like what they were trying. I like what they were going for. I like that it was different. I like that it was interesting, even if not everything about it was successful, but I'm glad I read it.
I'm very curious what you thought of Batman 72, Tom King, Michael Janin, Jorge Fornas, Jordi Belair, Clayton Cowles.
Well, for a while, just real quick, Jorge Fornas is a delight. I don't even care what the words are. Just like, why don't all Batman books look like this? I mean, I totally know that it's straight up like, let's do Dave Mazzucchelli year one. Yeah. Don't care. It's great. It's
great.
It really is. There's the page where he sort of stands up. There's four.
I'm looking at that page right now. That was what I was going to mention as the highlight of the issue.
Oh my God. And there's Bane's shadow is across his family. Wonderful.
That's an amazing page. It's one of the best pages I've seen in a while.
I mean, so this was sort of enjoyable because basically it is a summary of every single thing that's happened since the beginning of Tom King's run.
Right.
Which I think was helpful for me because it's been a long time and there were a lot of things and how Bane was involved. And
someone is telling Bane what he did.
Right. And it is
and
not
that's telling us. And we the reveal at the end is that it's evil Tom's. Jor-El. Yeah. No, Tom.
Yeah.
One of those two.
It's evil Thomas Tom Wayne. And
from Flash.
Because for a while, like at first, like, oh, it's Batman talking. And then you go, that's not Batman talking. Who's talking? Which could be annoying, but I think that it was done on purpose. So I think it worked in that way. So the timelines were a little, but it was good. Like, it also made me feel like, okay, maybe the end of this tunnel is in front of us. But it gave context to a lot of things. It gave context to the wedding and how that happened and why that happened and what the thinking was behind it. And the writing also had a very naturalistic feel to it. I remember reading it thinking like, it's almost like this is, almost stream of consciousness stuff.
Right.
About the characters and about what's going on. And I think that it worked well in that way. You asked me what I thought, and then I just talked.
No, that's because I wanted to know. It was good. I had the same thought that you did. It was, I thought almost more interesting than good. And then the Jorge Fornas art was a delight. And I would, as you said, don't even need the dialogue. Nope. All due respect to Tom King, but like it was beautiful. I mean, he wrote the drawings, but yeah, it's tough because you know. This is issue 72. This run is we're just going to issue 100. So, all the stuff that's happened in you know Tom King's taken off the book. He's going to finish the run in a miniseries. There's still a lot of issues left.
It's a heck of a lot of comics. I mean, what was the record? The old record was Stan and Jack for 100 and what?
109.
Wasn't much more than this. You know, that was when Bendis reached it on Ultimate Spider-Man. That was the thing. Right.
Well, my point is, I don't know how close we are to the end of this because we have at least as originally planned, another 28 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of issues.
Well, I'm not really against it, you know.
But who knows? Who knows what's going to happen now?
I don't know. But you know, it was part of the same thing that was going on that I've mostly enjoyed. That's what it was.
I didn't love how Fornas drew Thomas Wayne in the portrait. But other than that, he's my guy. He can draw a Batman from now on.
Yeah, he can. I mean, I don't like I don't like alternate universe Thomas Wayne. I don't like it. I'm not going to like it. I want it to not be there. It is there, but it shouldn't be.
I'm telling you, if he goes over and kills Jor-El, then kills himself,
they should kill each other. Yeah. And then
somehow Damian dies as well.
And then they hold up a hand for Alfred.
Man-eaters, I know that got solved. But. Number 9, Chelsea Kane, new artist Elise McCall. I thought this was the best issue of Man-Eaters so far.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like maybe things are finally starting happening. You know, we've had 9 issues, 2 of which have been sort of these offshoot, you know, goofy magazine issues. So really, we've only had about 7 issues. And I thought as I've been enjoying this, I thought the first, you know, 5 or so, we're really just sort of spinning our wheels within this world. Mm-hmm. And now here, we've finally taken some movement. So Maud, the main character, who's only named once in the whole issue, I feel like the main character needs to be named more than that, especially when it's not Batman.
I figure that whoever it is that is coming on board, they figured nobody's starting with this one. Like, if you don't know by now.
I've been reading them all, and I was like, who the fuck is this character? What is her name?
You are old, and you are not the target market.
Anyway, she gets sent to
rehab.
A rehab facility, which allows Chelsea Kane to do her takeoff on Hollywood rehab facilities. This one's in Malibu. It has the brochure, people doing yoga, and they're having wine on the, you know, infinity pool, and none of that's real. It's more like I don't want to say a concentration camp, but it's not like that, but it's more like a prison where they're in these cells that are deep underground, mm-hmm. and there's this horrible room at the bottom where they deal with women who are menopausal, and I thought this was funny. They've all been funny. I thought this was thought-provoking. They've all been thought-provoking. Mm-hmm. I thought the art was good. With the new artist, it's a little cartoonier than the last art, the first artist. As I said, we've moved forward a little bit. She's now in this prison. She has started this sort of, I don't say girl gang, but they've got a plan going.
There's a mission.
I thought the ending was good with the girl singing in the jungle song. Mm-hmm. I thought that was creepy. If you could see it in a film done in a really creepy way, that was cool. I thought the fact that all the people working at the facility were like hipster dudes was funny.
Yep.
I liked it. I thought this was I had kind of gotten to the point where I was like, am I still liking this? Because it's not really going anywhere. And I thought this issue felt like it was finally going somewhere.
Well, I really didn't like that last issue. And I suspect I suspect that was because they had to find a new artist.
Could be.
That's my guess.
This happened twice.
Yeah, might be. But either way, to make room.
I skimmed that one. I didn't.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Yeah. Yeah. Ryan and I got in a big talk about it. I will tell you couple of quick thoughts. When there's a thing about the dad dropping the daughter off and she, you know, she feels bad about it. And you know, the Professor Xavier is a jerk page. I was like, no, not the dad. He's one of the good guys we have. He takes her hat away. And then you find out later he's in on the thing. And I was like, oh, thank God. Because I didn't want the dad to be the guy who wasn't listening to his daughter in this one book. Like, they like give her a really good father for who she is and what she needs, and that's what I wanted. Chelsea Kane is a huge talent. I think she's funny and imaginative and unique and
angry.
Yeah, well, she should be. It sucks what happened to her.
I'm not saying it's misplaced. I mean, that's what's great about her writing is it comes through. All the anger comes through the form of humor, mm-hmm. But you never forget that she's angry underneath that, which is good.
Yeah,
the issues are important.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, it was a good issue, and I was glad to see forward progress.
Switching gears, I was going to say ever so slightly, but not really. Justice League 25. It's pretty much a big gear shift. I only wanted to mention this. This is a double sized. Both finale of the Sixth Dimension story and prelude to Year of the Villain. So the first story is Scott Snyder, Jorge Jimenez wrapping up their Sixth Dimension adventure, which I've actually really liked. I've really enjoyed this arc. And then there's a James Tynion and Javier Fernandez story that's the prelude to Year of the Villain. I love Javier Fernandez. He used to draw Nightwing. I wanted to mention only so people could be aware of what the setup for Year of the Villain is, because it's laid out here. I'm sure it'll be laid out in the other books. But while the Justice League was gone in the sixth dimension, things on Earth didn't go so well because Mr. Mixius Pidlick was wreaking havoc. And so Lex Luthor and the Legion of Doom saved the day on Earth while they were off in the sixth dimension. And basically said to everybody, hey, the source wall's broken. The Justice League did it. We're all going to die in about a year because all this stuff's coming from the source wall. We're not going to make it. There's nothing we can do about it. So I'm going to liquidate my holdings, give everybody my money. I'm going to give everybody superpowers who wants it. Let's just be bad guys for a year because we're all going to die. Let's really just embrace our inner nature. And I can feel where that's coming from in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was interesting. It's like, fuck it, let's just burn this place down because we're all going to die. And that's, I guess that is the sort of underlying premise of Year of the Villain.
Yeah.
I just want people, that's all.
All right.
Because I know a lot of people aren't reading this book. So, and it was interesting. Now, obviously this is comics, so this book isn't really affecting other books. You know, every book's really in its own bubble, no matter what the companies say. And so in this little bubble, this is what's happening.
God, I don't like all the underpinnings of it at all.
Let it burn.
Yeah, that's fine. Everybody gets what they want is another way to look at it. Like whatever it is that your flavor is, then you get that flavor. Hey, so a lot of people came to me and they said, I'm going to do it.
Don't spoil it.
I'm going to.
You can't.
I have to.
No, the old Walking Dead rules are still in effect.
Okay.
I'm reading still, in trades.
If you, okay, for you, yes, that's fine.
Yeah.
So that being said, I'm going to do my best here. Anyway, a bunch of people, I think that means three, said to me, hey,
no, more than that. There was a lot of people saying,
said you should read Walking Dead 192, and I've been reading it. Yeah, I'd had enough. Like I'd been through, you know, whatever, 100, it was probably 160, 170 or something at that point, and I was like, oh, this is never going to stop, and I don't want that. I'd gotten it. It was fine. I didn't like walk away angry or anything, but
you didn't like throw your Spider-Man costume in the garbage and walk away.
Yeah, I threw my I still have my Walking Dead flower pot
hat. That oversized Walking Dead t-shirt and hat.
I definitely don't have the t-shirt anymore. I don't know what happened to that. Didn't we give it away or something?
Probably. Oh, I didn't think we paid for it.
We definitely didn't pay for it.
Maybe we just gave it back to the booth.
I think
anyone
knows what
we're talking about. Josh interviewed. Well,
yes, they told me to keep. They told me to keep it, and I was like, "I'm not going to wear this shirt," and so I put it back.
They had him. Was it your idea to dress up in all the Walking Dead gear to interview him?
While we were doing the interview, while Ron was doing the interview with Robert Kirkman, this was Jesus.
That's right.
12 years ago,
right? The show was just about to start.
Yeah. No, this is after. Yeah. You're right. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
It was the first season because Darabont was there.
Yep. Doesn't matter. While they were doing that, I just started grabbing things and putting them on from the booth without asking or doing anything like that. And then I stumbled into shot. So nobody had expected that, including me. And I've rattled Robert Kirkman for the first time I've ever seen. And it was a good time. Anyway, Walking Dead 192, a character dies.
I mean, I can. The context clues lead me to believe I know what's going on. I just feel like as a comics community, we all had agreed on something.
Sure.
Everyone had agreed. This is the book we don't spoil. And all of a sudden I see people going, well, you know, the thing with the guy. And I'm like, okay, well,
I don't see how you will make it to reading the trade for this.
Well, I mean, to be fair to people making the book, no one really talked about the book anymore.
It's a good
point. This is the first time anyone's really talked about it forever. So
yeah,
I feel like I know what happened.
Anyway, because I haven't been reading it, I can't tell you it made a big impact on me.
Right.
I see how it is significant. I thought it was well done, but at this point, most of what I remember about this book is that a character dies, and then the other characters have to come to terms with it.
Right.
I think the most interesting thing about it was how much things had progressed since I left. And I was impressed by that, but not enough to be like, oh man, I got to get back on this. Like right. Basically there's, I don't know, they called it the Commonwealth, I think. There's
Virginia.
Oh.
No?
No,
like Massachusetts.
Basically, they'd set up a society with a government, right. and like at one point, one of the characters is like, "I was gonna go get some pancakes for breakfast," and I was like, "They have restaurants again," you know, things like that. I was like, "Oh, so it was kind of interesting." It was like visiting an old friend who you haven't seen for a while, but don't really have anything in common with anymore.
Right.
That's what it felt like. But you know, if you're there for it and you want to keep reading it, you can. Also, I think that the change that happened is probably a good thing. And
192 issues in, I think any major.
If I'm Robert Kirkman, I'm happy for the challenge of that, because I think it gets real easy to be like, well, I know exactly who this person is. There are no things left to learn. You know, you've explored every element, which they don't care about in mainstream comics so much because you're trying to keep it the same. But at a certain point with this, and then what you get with mainstream comics is that you get different interpretations on the character, and he can't do that.
Right.
So
what's the record? Is it Cerebus?
300?
Is that the record?
I think so.
So he's still got a ways to go.
Yeah.
There
might be some other, like, Elf Quest or something like that that's gone on longer that I don't know about. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's Cerebus for things that most people would know
about. And we're talking about, like, single creator owned, and obviously there's a team on this, but it's basically the same team since the issue 7.
Yeah.
But Kirkman writing, I'm not talking like 2000 AD, which has had tons of different stories and different creators working on it. I'm talking about like single vision indie book. And I think it's Cerebus.
I feel like that's it. And that's 300 issues for sure.
He can knock out another 100 issues.
Oh, it's not. I don't think it's a problem at all. I think he's going to go on forever. They just left. The other big thing in this is at the end this was Stefano Gaudiano's last issue, and he's been inking since the All Out Total War. It was like 112 or so, like that. Right. And Adlard's going to go back to inking himself.
Oh.
And Cliff Rathburn does the gray tones, but they had needed something to speed that up. And I thought that was interesting. They weren't going to bring another inker in.
Don't leave out Russ Wooten, the sheriff of Tombstone, as a letterer.
I won't.
Sheriff Wooten? Those are the books we want to talk about. It was a good week.
Yeah.
It felt like a smaller week than the fifth week we had last week.
The amount of books each week over the past month or so have been weird.
Maybe because all the books were basically normal size, as opposed to every book being three size. So let's talk about the Patreon pick. We mentioned it earlier, patreon.com/ifanboy. Every Wednesday morning, the voting opens up there. And you can vote through Thursday afternoon to add a book to the rundown. Everyone is available to vote. It's a fun time. We get to watch the results. This week was a tight four-book race until the very end, in which The Incredible Hulk Last Call, number one, from Peter David and Dale – I never could pronounce this as a kid.
Kion.
Dale Kion, Mark Farmer on inks with Mark Deering and Walden Wong and Scott Hahn, a lot of anchors. Peter Steigerwald with John Starr in colors, Corey Pettit on letters. So this – which they don't tell you until the end, which I thought was a mistake. Because the whole time I'm thinking, what the fuck is this? But then they tell you at the end, basically for the 80th anniversary of most of these characters, they are bringing together one-shot issues by classic teams. And Peter David and Dale Kion was probably the best-known Hulk creative team. Peter David wrote Hulk for 12 years in the 90s, 80s, 90s. And much of the best work was drawn by Dale Kion. I read some of it, not nearly all of it.
That was my question.
My buddy Patrick, who used to do some work for us many years ago, he was a big fan of this run, so I would read him the books at his house, and I dip in and out. That's one of the runs I always wanted to be able to read someday.
I have a feeling like I would really like that run. If I had read it, I would have been a total.
I think so too.
Acolyte.
And so they bring back this team together. I don't know the last time I read a Peter David book. He's still.
He had a stroke a number of years back, and so his work sort of dropped off quite a bit.
I mean, this was weird, but I liked it.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. There was definitely a thing where
only weird because I didn't know what it was. Now that I know what these books are, the next time I see one, I'll know what it is. Do you know what I mean?
There's
I kept
also,
going. Is this a miniseries? Like I wasn't sure how to interpret the story, because if it's a miniseries, you're looking at it a different way than it, as a one shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't know what I was reading. That's all.
What am I reading? What was I reading? Because I don't know. Like, is it a miniseries?
This? No, it was just a one shot.
It was just one shot?
Yeah.
Okay. And it was, I guess it was like a continuing, it was supposed to exist in the world of his run, not really paying attention to what's happening now.
Yeah.
That's the way I looked at it.
Yeah.
And having not read that, I
or
think
an evergreen story. Really.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting about it says last call. You can't do more after that. First of all, I think in both the case of the artist and the writer, what I came away with is that they're both really good. Mm-hmm. And they don't stick out a ton now in contrast to what's being done, but there is a difference in sort of styles of the eras. Like the writing is a little different than you read in most comics now, like Peter David's style, which was very modern and forward thinking at one time, and now it doesn't feel that way as much. And it's the same thing with Dale Keown. I was like, oh, I like this art, but it doesn't quite feel like something you'd see a lot of now.
It didn't. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I did read some of this, and then I did read his indie book, which was basically just the Hulk again, like all the books in the 90s were when they left Marvel.
Right.
I remember being more dynamic, and I think it shows more when he draws the Hulk. When he drew the regular people, I think I couldn't tell if it was the inkers or what, but I didn't open the book and go, wow, it's Dale Keown again. It was like, oh, that's weird. Why does he look like this? I don't know if that's the way he just draws now, because that could be too, but it wasn't exactly how I remember Dale Keown being. It also could be my memory being faulty. That's also possible.
Sure. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I mean, it was kind of like I wouldn't have read this. Actually, that's not true. I went to read this. I saw that it was Peter David, and it's one of those things that I've always wanted to read, so I was like, well, I'll get a little taste of it and see how it goes. But it didn't blow me away, really. It's mm-hmm. weird because we've also got whatever's going on in what's the book right now? The Invincible Hulk?
The Immortal Hulk.
Immortal Hulk. That's a weird take on the Hulk. And there's several different Hulks in it, which again is I think a Peter David thing. I have a little trouble sort of like nail down where the Hulk is right now or what he's supposed to be. It's one of those things where there's just a lot of different versions of the character, and so it doesn't feel like there's a definitive one right now. So sometimes it's hard to, so when there's not a definitive version and then somebody does an alternate one, it's hard to pin that down. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I think that's what it felt like a little bit. But I liked it. I had fun reading it.
Yeah, I think that would be, I also had fun reading it. That would be my take on it. So let's do ratings on it.
Ratings.
Well, let's just real quick. It's basically, if anyone hasn't read it, it's Bruce Banner calls Suicide Hotline, says basically he wants to end it because he's racked with guilt over Betty dying because of the Hulk, and he's hired an assassin who's going to shoot him or not shoot him depending on the signal he gives. And the whole conversation is basically him talking to this suicide person, a hotline person, until she gets attacked by this guy she met at a bar. It turns out is Mr. Hyde, and so he has to save her and then decides to call off the assassin who is revealed to be Deadpool. It was the 90s all over again.
It was, but it was also like with tinges of now.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is Deadpool from now? Or I don't know. I didn't read it then. Here's the thing. The only thing I thought is that there's all these things about how every time he's tried to kill himself, the Hulk has shown up and it, you know. And I was like, if you have to give a hand signal to somebody, the Hulk is going to know and just transform. But whatever.
That's why he's a good scientist. He's not good at planning. He's not good at logistics.
He's bad. He's bad at killing himself. He's a terrible suicider.
Ratings. I'm gonna give it a 3.75 out of 5.
Okay, I was gonna go for 3.2, somewhere between 3.25 and 3.5. You saying 7.5 makes me want to lean more toward. I'm still gonna go with 3.25.
Okay.
It was enjoyable. I think that if I had read it before, I bet I would have gotten more out of it.
Mm.
That's my guess.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where everyone can vote to add a book to the rundown, every patron. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show. Kick it off, Josh.
Ryan Devitt will make sure that nothing... No beverages within a 5-foot radius of him will lose their carbonation.
He's a carbonator.
He's a carbonator.
But not like he doesn't have to hold it. It's just in his radius, things that are carbonated.
Yeah,
like, what about things that aren't supposed to be carbonated?
No, no, he doesn't carbonate things. He just maintains their state of optimal carbonization.
I see.
So it'd be like if you were at a table in a restaurant, say it's one of those like six people at a round table, something kind of thing. Everybody there is good.
Yeah.
Don't have to worry about their stuff going flat. While he doesn't make things carbonated that weren't carbonated, however, if you order something that should be carbonated but is not, but is flat, like their you know, their CO2 thing went.
Machine's dead. Yeah,
yeah. He'll fix that. That'll be fixed. It'll be what it should be.
What if he's sitting near the machine? Does he fix the machine?
Well, theoretically, the stuff that comes out of it, then, if the machine is within his orbit, the stuff that comes out will all be good. But if it doesn't stay within his orbit, then they will lose their carbonation.
Wait a minute. So, okay, but it won't go flat immediately because it came out of the machine carbonated.
Right. Yeah. No. He maintains it. It's like
in college.
Go ahead.
In college, one of my many jobs was at the dining hall, and one of my jobs was to maintain the soda machine.
Hmm.
And that was a pain in the ass.
Okay.
Yeah. Always make sure that thing's carbonated. Oh, Cokes are flat.
You got to do the CO2 tank. Those are heavy.
Yeah, it was fun.
I don't know if they still do it like that anymore.
Who knows? Probably just kombucha machines. Patrick M. Coyle can make sentient balloon animals.
Ooh.
His balloon animals become sentient.
Okay.
So he makes a lion out of balloons. Now there's a balloon lion. Now it's still a balloon, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's
vulnerable to all the things that a regular balloon would be vulnerable to?
Sure. Yeah.
I bet his sentient balloon animals are pretty anxious.
So, you know, there's good and bad here.
If I was a balloon, I don't think that I would want to be aware of how vulnerable I was to the environment. So wait, what you're saying is if I touch anything, I'm going to pop. But if I just sit here, I'll probably also lose my air. Yeah, that's about right.
No. In much of the way that animals aren't generally aware of their own mortality, okay, sentient balloon animals are not aware of their vulnerabilities.
I don't know that that's true, because I've seen a lot of squirrels, and those fuckers look nervous. That's the closest I ever come to a extemporaneous Mitch Hedberg joke. Those squirrels are nervous. They shouldn't be around here at all. Look at their eyes. They look like meth addicts.
Anyway. Sentient balloon animals.
Sentient balloon animals.
Yeah, sentient.
Joseph Fernandez has polish hands.
Oh, God damn it. I don't have that, but I have one similar. So that
well,
just
you can do it anyway. Oh, yeah. He's got polish hands that will restore the surface finish of any of a variety of surfaces.
Right.
So it's not. So, for example, you got to do the car, right? Now, that's going to require a different level of polishing speed and grit application than, say, an antique table.
Right.
So whatever that item requires to be polished optimally, then he will do that. For example, some things have more of a tactile or matte finish, and if you were to go in and polish them really hard, they would turn into a gloss finish, which is not what you'd want. This is not going to be a problem for Joseph. He's going to have the right – it's going to get to the right level of polish and cleanliness. His cars are beautiful, though.
Always beautiful.
Always.
How much work is involved?
Well, he doesn't have to, like, rub his hand back and forth like the Karate Kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just sort of, when he touches the surface, it becomes polished.
I see. Instant polish.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, he runs his hands over the car or whatever. Or you know, cleans the table up. Or, for example, in a microfiber situation, eyeglasses, LCD screens, things like that. Those are good, too.
All the wood in his house is gleaming.
Yeah, or not, as the case may be.
Ainsley Knox, who sounds like a Civil War general, or actually a Revolutionary War general. Similar power set. Ainsley Knox has basically Xanax hands. So if Ainsley Knox were to, you know, put her hand on your arm or whatever, touch your skin, you know, you could calm right down.
That's nice.
Calm down, relax. The medicinal effects of Xanax.
I have a question for you. Is Ainsley only a female name?
No.
Or can it also be a man's name?
Both.
Okay, that's what I thought. So I don't know which, but that's. Do you need a prescription to be with Ainsley?
No. Okay. Technically speaking, I mean, it's not exact. It's not actually the Xanax, but it's the effect of Xanax.
I see.
I was gonna say Calm Hands, but I thought Xanax was funnier. It's not like she's giving you, or he's giving you, Ainsley's giving you, you know, actual Xanax. It's the effect of it. It's the calming, relaxing, you know, anti-anxiety affecting of it, of the hands.
That's nice. That's nice.
But you can, I mean,
you want to be careful of like the, like, I assume there's control over it. Ainsley gives you a little pat on the shoulder. You're not going to fall asleep, right?
Right. I mean, there's an art to it.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah. That's good.
Patreon.com/iFanWiz where you can get your superpowers. Thanks to everyone who signs up to support the show. We do appreciate it. And we enjoy giving you your powers. Now, as promised, despite the fact that we are still somehow long, let's do some viewer mail.
They're not viewers.
Andrew M., I'm curious what you think about the modern use of decompressed storytelling in comics. Even though I've been enjoying each issue of the current Captain America and Shazam runs, I keep feeling like not much ground has been covered in either series. I find this even more frustrating when the writer isn't on the book very long. Do you feel this way? And how much of your current pull list do you think is too decompressed?
It's an interesting question because I think it's valid, but I don't think it's something I think about a lot.
Well, it's been like 20 years since they've been written this way.
I mean, I think the answer really is that I want some things to be like that, and I don't want other things to be like that. But when he brings up the case of, you know, Captain America and Shazam, I think that's correct. I think that those books are good and interesting, but it does feel like I'm treading water for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
The Shazam one's a good case. One of those issues came out this week, and yeah. I was thinking about this in relation to it. And I don't know, some things feel like a little breakneck speed is fun. Like you're like, oh, we're flying through, we're getting stuff done. Like old comics. This is when we talked about, you know, we just talked about the Daredevil Born Again storyline, or we had done, you know, we talked about the Superman. Like any of the old books we talked about from the 90s, they moved a lot faster than these. And it was enjoyable, but that might just because it was novel. There's other stories, though, where that speed really lets you do characterization and stuff that they weren't able to do in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it almost really depends on the story, the characters, the story being told. Like, sometimes it feels too slow, and other times it feels just right. It really just depends. I mean, I think a good example of this would be people's all over the place opinions on Batman. You know, some people think it's way too slow. Some people are enjoying the character. And it really just depends on tastes and the story being told, I think. I mean, and obviously, yeah. For 19 years, this has been the dominant form of storytelling. So it's just the way it is at the moment until a book comes along to change everything. That's what the authority did to come along and make you create this zeitgeist. This is the way comics are made. And then in some time, another book will come along maybe and change it again. But you know, for 19 years, there've been good and bad comics. Sometimes it's too slow. Sometimes they're not too slow.
Yeah. I think it has to do with the story, the intention, you know, whatever the point is the creators are trying to get across.
I will say I haven't felt that way about Shazam.
No?
I'm trying to think about Captain America. Captain America has been monthly, so it's hard to say because everything's so broken now.
That's the other thing. The fact that the double shipping has really messed up my view of this because it's hard to tell what's
right. Because if some of these books were coming out twice a month were coming out monthly, it might feel like more of a slog.
Yep. I'm definitely sure.
I just don't think about it about Shazam, but again, that's totally fine. That's valid.
I think my case with the slowness is a very relative term in this case. It has more to do with the fact that it does ship monthly, and so it feels like forever. Was this last one late?
I don't know, but it felt like this week's, you know, stuff happened. The story moved forward.
Yes.
So,
but it just feels like it took us a long time to get here, maybe. But I think that has to do. I think this issue was late. That's my guess.
It could be,
but I'm not sure.
But also, I think also because it's taken 4 months or 5 months to get to a point where other books would be 2.5 because of the shipping.
Right. Yeah. No, we're screwed up. Like it's messed up our expectations for sure. Yep. But double shipping, at least for DC, will be done at some point.
Thank God. Well, and then it's gonna be all screwed up because Marvel will be double shipped, and then it's gonna get all. It's getting all fucked up.
Well, we'll see.
Next email.
Justin F. of Kentucky says, so I've had to pack up a bunch of comics for a move, and it made me go through old comics that needed to be properly stored so I could eventually be entombed with them. Anyway, finding old
mummy.
Yeah, well, obviously. Finding old single issues of events made me wonder, who does event comics the best? Geoff Johns had a good streak and writes a damn good comic. But Bendis has done so many. Or maybe Marv Wolfman, not sure. Bendis wrote my favorite, which was Siege, which was short, tightly written, and didn't make me buy 30 tie-ins. It's a tough question because I don't immediately think of things that come to mind as in who is in charge of them.
And also, the events are so fraught. They're also so kind of irrelevant. Even though we're really enjoying the War of the Realms, it's not like it's taken over the Marvel universe, you know? When Civil War happened, basically all the Marvel books were about that event. For good or for ill, you know? And so you could totally be not reading any of the War of the Realms books and not have any idea it's actually happening.
Yeah.
And then what everybody wants at an event is a different thing. And all the also, again, depends on the quality and execution. I remember we really liked Siege because it was so short and tightly written, but I don't know, you know, I don't know how effective that made it as an event because it didn't really feel like it, again, was important.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that comes down to it is, you and I know have been talking about this for years, like, what is an event? And I don't think it's a thing. I think it's a thing we're made to think, and some things are crossovers, and I like the word crossover. Crossover right. Makes sense to me. Like, in a way, every superhero comic should be an event.
Yeah, and events used to be, I really do think they used to be different because they used to take over the line, at least in a bigger way than they do now. And I would be very curious to talk to people at the companies and see how the sales actually still do. Mm-hmm. They must still do something because they wouldn't keep doing them if they didn't. They wouldn't just do them out of inertia. So they must still raise the sales on a lot of these books.
I mean, I think that it's a hit or miss kind of thing where one that hits, one that works, you know, really does make an impact. Your Civil Wars.
Right. They're still chasing that dragon.
And so their creators who are going to come in, some of them are going to have an idea and they're going to want to do it. Like every, not even just like creator, but every sort of team of editors and writers at those retreats and things like that, they are going to want to come. Like, well, how do we match what we did with Civil War? You know, and sometimes it's Civil War 2, and sometimes it's Fear itself, and sometimes it's War of the Realms, and they all have various scopes depending on what else is going on. But I don't know how much that has to do with the single writer.
And also, like Bendis did Siege, but he also did a Secret Invasion, which I thought was a disaster. And
yeah. Yeah, he's done both sides, and then he's doing this, Leviathan thing now.
It's called Event Leviathan. They put it in the title.
Well, I guess then we can't argue with that.
And I hope it's good. But
obviously,
you know, I think your golden age of events in the modern comics world we had Civil War and Infinite Crisis very close together, and then we had Secret Invasion and Final Crisis coming out at the same time. And I think ever since then, it's sort of been they've been kind of irrelevant.
If you
go back when Secret Invasion and Final Crisis were coming out at the same time, if you go back on iFanboy.com, that's all anybody was talking about the whole time because it was sort of it sort of took over the community. And I think because Final Crisis was so polarizing and Secret Invasion was so disappointing for most people, it sort of broke people on events. I feel like that 1-2 punch. Because it hasn't been, I haven't felt the same way about events since then.
I just take them all with a grain of salt now.
I just don't feel like, you know, it's like, okay, I'll read it, but if I don't read it, it's fine too.
Yeah.
It used to be where important things happened. Important characters died or came back or.
Yeah, but that's
status quos were set, you know, like the worlds were changed, in quotes, I'm saying like, you know, by status quo. You know, I'm really enjoying War of the Realms. I don't expect anything really major to change in the Marvel Universe because of it.
Well, the fact is now nothing makes sense, nothing matters. We didn't know that then. But now it is like you look at that and go, oh, yeah, that's correct. Nothing makes sense, nothing matters.
Marv Wolfman.
Yeah, obviously.
Contact at ifanboy.com. That's where you can write us in or send in your audio clip. Somebody did that late this week. Not in time for the show, but well, maybe next week they'll be on the show. What's coming up, Josh? Or has happened? Or
well, we put out our... Booksplode of Daredevil Born Again. Mm-hmm. A good time was had by both of us who had read that, and the vast majority of people who had read it in the past, or the ones I really like, the ones who had never read it and went to it and went, wow, you guys weren't kidding. That makes me feel good. So that's a thing that happened. If you haven't, you know, that'll be there forever. You can go ahead and check that out and read it or listen if you haven't. Definitely recommend that. Then by the time you listen to this, Connor, what will most likely exist?
No, I mean, I'm not going to put a stake in the ground in case there's like an earthquake, but most likely you will have the Dark Phoenix show, special edition show, right behind this one on the feed. It'll have come out probably Saturday as this show comes out Sunday, where Paul Montgomery and I talk about Dark Phoenix, which is the name of the movie, not X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Yeah. You pretty much burned your last bridge with Paul. I mean, yeah. you can't be asking him to help you move or give you an airport ride at this point.
Paul, I also need a kidney. So yeah,
I bet
so
if he you has hear nice, clean kidneys.
Oh my God, his liver is pristine.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good idea. So if
wait,
you
wait, to farm Paul Montgomery's organs.
So, so right behind the show on the feed, you'll find our Dark Phoenix show in which Paul and I talk about the last X-Men film, unless the New Mutants actually comes out, which I would not stake my life on. Anyway, the last of these films, we'll be talking about it. What do we think? Go check it out and find out. Where is that located? iFanboy.com. That's where you can find all of our podcasts, this show, our special edition shows, our Booksplodes, our Talksplodes, our old articles. If you want to go back and see what the community was thinking about Secret Invasion and Final Crisis 10 years ago, you can go back and find all that stuff at iFanboy.com. It's all there. You can also find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/iFanboy or following us at iFanboy on Twitter and also at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. Follow us there where you can get not only find out about the pick, but you can also get the Best of the Week in Panels feature, which we've been doing, which you brought back a couple months ago. So that's a fun time. All that's happening at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. And also individually, we are at Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and at CS Kilpatrick on Instagram.
Here's what I know. We ask people to support the show a bunch of different ways. You can do it directly. You can donate. You can do these things. And then one of the last things we always say, if you like the show, leave a review, talk about it, be the street team. And I can tell you something. Those of you at home are thinking, I wish they'd stop saying that. I hate to tell you, it works. I've seen more of it the more I've been doing it, which means people are listening to me and following up and taking action by recommending the show. And we see that when it happens on social media and things like that. And
we also say leave a star rating on iTunes, and now it's dead. There's no more iTunes.
Well, on Apple Podcasts.
I guess I don't use it.
Well, wherever it is you do that kind of thing, I'm pretty sure that whatever the Apple app for podcasts is, that's where you would do it. And it's been that way on your phone forever. So
we'll have to see how this shakes out and wherever you listen to podcasts, review, star rating. For us or any podcast you listen to, that'd be very helpful.
Well, I don't know if there's an aggregator for reviews or anything. I know there's lots of aggregators for downloading things.
Right,
but for years I don't think like what's going on your phone will change, other than the fact that I stopped using Apple Podcasts a while ago. Leave a review for this show wherever it is, Yelp, I don't care, or whatever shows you like. It's really this isn't even just about us; it's about the shows.
I don't
want to
see our Yelp reviews.
I don't want to see that. I believe there's Facebook reviews. You can leave Facebook reviews. Please don't do that.
Anyway, we'll sort out the technical side. When these changes actually go into effect.
Sure thing. That's all I have for this week, man.
Well, I was going to say, and I meant to say at the top of the show, and I had a whole bit planned, now it's ruined, is that I resented every minute I had to read comics this week.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's true.
Because it was a minute I wasn't reading Fall or Dodge in Hell from Neal Stephenson, the new Neal Stephenson book that came out this week. I'm flying through it. In every other moment I've got, but I was reading my comics going, I don't want to be reading this.
I did have quite a bit of that.
I want to be reading Neal Stephenson.
Yeah. You're going to be done a lot sooner than I am. I just know in like 3 weeks I have a cross-country flight where I can make a good dent. Before then, it's going to be catch-as-catch-can.
I'm on the point with any Neal Stephenson book, almost any Neal Stephenson book, where I'm like, were this a normal book, I would be like a good percentage done, 33%, 50%, some books. where I'm not even thinking about it.
Have you hit the momentum part though?
I think so.
The part where you're like, oh, I get it, and then you can't stop.
I hit the part where I really wanted to talk to you about it, but I know you're not at that part, so I've been trying not to bring it up.
That's the tough thing about books. I'm reading books from the past right now. I'm reading you read it's a Neal Stephenson moment. You read The Cobweb, which was from 1996, which I had just recently listened to an audiobook of. And after I finished that, I started listening to Interface, which is the 1994 book with him and the same co-writer, which is not as good as The Cobweb, but still interesting enough that it's worth your time. And I'm just about done with that. And it's the same thing. Like, I'm like, oh, this is an interesting thing to talk about. And because we are all part of this culture, you know, where everybody's watching things at the same time and you can talk about stuff on social media with your friends or whatever as it's happening. When you read a book that's 25 years old, it's not quite as relevant to the people. You have to really pick your audience for that.
Well, for sure, but it's also tough because I know you're reading it. You're just behind me because
and will be for some time.
And I was like, last night, I was like, oh!
Yeah.
Josh, never mind. I'll tell you about it in August.
Yeah, there are moments like that in Interface. And I was like, this is never, I'm not even going to remember it. So
Ron does that with me with the Expanse series. I'm always like 6 months behind him. He's like, I wanted to tell you this thing. And I get to the point, I'm like, okay, I got there. What did you want to say? He's like, I don't remember.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So there you go. There's your little bit of Neal Stephenson discussion. I'm going to go back to reading that book. And until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Bye. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.